I'm Khalil A. Colonna, and this is Nashville. Oh, yes, it's good to be back in the host's chair, and it's truly good to be with you. Thanks for tuning in wherever and however you may be listening. Now, look, I may have a little bit of rust to knock off, so bear with me as I get back up to speed, all right? Now, the relationship between humans and dogs goes way back, way back. We're talking thousands of years. Dogs and humans have been companions as the world changes and evolves. Both creatures depend on each other for comfort, care, and sometimes life itself. For some people, having a dog is much more than having a pet. Their canine companion could be key to the human to live a fully engaged life. Now, what kind of dogs am I talking about? Service dogs. Yes, service dogs can help blind and vision impaired humans get around. They can sense when a medical emergency is imminent. They also can create a sense of calm when anxiety reaches threatening heights. Service dogs can and do serve many more tasks than the ones I just mentioned. So let's find out what these wonderful creatures are and what they can do. Now, for that, allow me to introduce our first guest. Chris Diefenthaler is the executive director of Assistance Dogs International. She joins us now. Chris, thank you so much for being here and welcome to This is Nashville.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me and happy to be here.
Really appreciate you being here. So break down the preeminent question. What is a service dog? Give me the most common definition.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the actual broad term is actually called assistance dogs. And those are dogs that are trained to mitigate an individual's disability. There are categories under the assistance dogs title, and that would be service dogs is one of those categories that is categorized by dogs that are trained to assist disabilities other than visual impairments or hearing loss, which is covered by guide dogs and hearing dogs.
What other types of assistance dogs are there?
Well, just as I explained, the three different types are guide dogs for the visually impaired or blind, hearing dogs for the hearing impaired or deaf, and then service dogs are the category for all other types of disabilities.
Okay. Now, is there a legal definition for service dogs?
As far as the American with Disabilities Act uses the term service animals. And again, the same type of definition that it's a dog trained to assist someone with a disability to mitigate their disability.
Okay. So the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, defines what a service animal is. But is there any sort of federal regulation that all folks who work with service animals, particularly in this case, service dogs, is there any form of regulation that everyone has to adhere to?
Well, besides the American with Disabilities Act, there are other disability right advocates and laws that may apply, especially at the state level. But primarily, it's the federal law that guarantees an individual with a disability may be accompanied by their assistance dog in all areas of their daily life.
Okay. So primarily, it's up to the states to determine the specific laws for how service animals or assistance animals, in this case, service dogs, are regulated in their state, right?
Well, it depends. It's like the housing, there's different laws under the Department of Urban Development, and housing has their own laws and definitions. So it really depends on what area that the law covers.
Okay. But I'm curious, what type of complications does the lack of a standard have on, you know, creating regulations for service dogs? Someone may live in Tennessee now, but then they want to take their service dog to Texas if they happen to move there.
Yeah, there really shouldn't be any issues state to state within the United States.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now tell me, how did you get started in the service dog world?
Oh, well, my history goes back to the love of dogs and always involved in dogs and dog training growing up. And then my education, I furthered in the special education field So for me, it was a true marriage of two passions and training dogs to help someone with a disability and improve their independence in their daily living.
Mm. You glad you chose this path?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And started out as a volunteer with a local organization and eventually was hired and then was eventually promoted up to the executive director of one of our member organizations. And then this opportunity became available to be the executive director for the International Umbrella Organization. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for me.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Now, my next guest is the certified service dog trainer. Hallie Wells is the regional advisor for puppy raising service at Dogs Inc., which is formerly known as Southeastern Guide Dogs. They're based out of Atlanta. Hallie, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you being here. Tell me how your journey with service dogs began. How'd you get involved?
My journey with service dogs began when I was doing my undergrad at the University of Georgia, and I was interested in becoming a vet at the time and recognized that my connection to humans and dogs really intermingled. And while I was still interested in the science and the medical information shared in the veterinary field and supporting people that way, I was really shifting towards behavioral health and the connection between humans and their animals. And then I started puppy raising with the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs and went from there.
Mm. So tell me, what is it about the human animal connection that gives you the passion to do what you do?
The human animal connection is really spectacular to me. I enjoy knowing that these dogs can support our clients. They can support their partners in ways that a human might not be able to. I remember working with a particular client at the time, and he was like, well, my dog will pick up my keys for me 100 times and still be excited to do that task over and over. Mm. And the weight of asking someone else to do that for him was lifted by having a service dog that, you know, greeted him with that smile every time he picked up that dropped item. And it really gave him the independence and the confidence to continue living his life with that increased independence of having a service dog. Being able to partner people with dogs in that capacity is just something that's really exciting for me, and it's extremely fulfilling.
Can you give us an estimate on the number of dogs you've trained?
Oh man, that is... That's hard. I have puppy raised, which means I've started at the puppy raising process. So the dog is about 8 weeks old when they come into my home, and they leave about 1.5 to 2 years old. I've puppy raised dozens by now. I've kind of lost track of that. Hmm. And then I've trained just as many service dogs and different assistance dogs.
That's got to be hard. You have dozens upon dozens of puppies you raise for a year or two. Then you have to let them go. That's got to be a little bit of a sad moment in your home, I imagine.
There definitely is a sad moment. I will say it does get easier when you have that vision of this dog being a partner to someone and being a support system for them. Really watching the dog grow from this puppy that might have been, you know, bouncing around my house and running around and grabbing things off the floor and, you know, jumping on people and stuff like that, to a dog that really has spectacular stimulus control and is unbelievably well behaved in public and just really in tune to me and the environment around them and how to respond and engage. And I think that's where a lot of puppy raisers find their passion and their ability to pass the leash off to someone else, to another trainer at the transfer when they start working with a formal trainer and pick up the next puppy in the same day.
Mm. Yeah, you said something that sparked my curiosity. In public, the dogs are puppies and the dogs are well-behaved. Would you say that the dogs are more well-behaved than some children out there?
You know, Yes and no. I love to give my puppies the freedom and the ability to explore their environment and engage, but we also want to build that foundation for engaging in a certain way. So there's all different types of people and there's all different types of puppies, and I'm happy to involve my life with all of them.
Excellent. Now, if you're just tuning in, this is Nashville and I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. We're talking this hour about service dogs, what they are and how they can help people. My guests are Hallie Wells and Chris Diefenthaler. Now, Chris, Assistance Dogs International is an international organization, which makes me think, I have this question about it. How does the United States stack up to other countries in terms of service dog laws and protections?
Well, the service assistance dogs laws in the United States are very broad. The again, the American with Disabilities Act is the act that provides the public access privileges for anybody with a disability to have a trained assistance dogs out with them in public. There are no other regulations, requirements, other than the individual is self-identified as someone that has a disability, that a dog can be trained to help mitigate their disability.
Okay, what about the comparison to other countries?
In other countries, there are more restrictions on the organizations that are allowed to train dogs for individuals. So in some countries, there are specific laws that dogs have to be trained by a specific organization, or the country may have a testing system with their government to indeed verify that that dog is trained. So it just varies quite widely by countries.
Mm. Tell me about how ADI factors into the equation, your organization. What do you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Assistance Dogs International, we set the standards for the assistance dogs industry. So all of our accredited member organizations have been thoroughly evaluated and assessed that they are meeting the ADI standards, which upholds the highest quality of training, as well as dog care, client ethics, and dog health and welfare, to ensure that when a client, an individual, receives an assistance dog, they're receiving a dog that is meeting their needs and is well behaved in the home as well as out in public.
Now, does it make sense to have an official registry in the U.S.?
Some people may feel that would be beneficial, but the logistics of something like that and the restrictions that that might bring for some individuals would probably not happen in the United States.
Mm, I understand. Now, Hallie, what does it take to be a service dog? Can any dog do the job?
Not every dog can do the job. That would be like going into a kindergarten classroom and saying, all right, guys, all of you are going to be neurosurgeons, mm-hmm. and expecting them to all go down that path. Dogs that are asked to be service dogs and work with a partner are going to have a different skill set than just the average family pet.
What are some of the characteristics that good service dogs possess?
I really love to see curiosity and confidence with assistance dogs. I enjoy seeing a dog that can work well with a variety of people. We want a dog that can transfer their affections very easily. We also want a dog that is easy to train. In the training world, we often call that biddable. So they are willing to work with us. We like a dog that can problem solve and can really generalize their training outside of the home so they can practice their skills while they're in public as well.
What breeds of dogs naturally gravitate towards being good for service?
Most commonly, I think the public sees Labrador retrievers, golden retrievers, and, you know, occasionally some German shepherds as the most common breeds. And they do tend to be the most successful, especially when working with different assistance dog organizations that provide the dogs free of charge, like Dogs Inc. does. And you do see all types of dogs that can make it as service dogs as well. But those tend to be the most common ones.
Is it their intelligence that gives them the upper hand?
I wouldn't say actually it's their intelligence. They're kind of the average B student.
Okay.
You know, they're not overthinking things. They aren't making things too complicated. They're willing to work on it, but they're not going to make things too challenging for themselves.
Okay, so what are some of the things that you focus on when you're training a dog?
When I'm training an assistance dog, I focus on building their confidence, making sure that they are familiar and comfortable working in any sort of environment. That includes noises, surfaces, different exposures, visual stimulus. We also want to focus on their stimulus control, which means how they're interacting and reacting with their environmental cues. So if there's food on the ground, what are they going to do around that? If there's a kid that's running and playing nearby, how are they going to respond to that? And that's really the foundation to having a dog that's comfortable and familiar in public.
Now, you know, Chris just mentioned that she thinks it's very difficult and almost virtually impossible to create a registry of assistance animals, particularly service dogs. The logistics would be really hard to do. Do you think it would be good for all involved if we were to develop and implement a system like that, a registry?
I think an implemented registry would be something, I don't think it would be an ideal environment. For one, it identifies people that have disabilities and registers them along with the service dog, which is just not a step in the right direction for the assistance dogs organizations and the people that we provide these service dogs with. And, you know, as long as the dog is well behaved in public and isn't distracting service dogs and is safe and upkept, at the end of the day, as long as they aren't being a distraction to a service dog, I just want to make sure that our service dogs stay safe and their partners are given the independence and empowerment that they're seeking out with a service dog.
Now, Chris, what are we getting wrong? Like, what do we need to improve when it comes to not only the training of service dogs, but really generating better knowledge about service dogs for the public?
As far as knowing exactly that these dogs are working while they are out in public, that's an important concept that individuals, as they come across individuals with a trained assistance dog out in public, should realize that they should not be interacting or distracting, especially individuals that may come across a dog and they have their own pet dog with them, that it would be very distracting and potentially dangerous for an individual with a dog to have a strange dog come up to that dog, assistance dog, and interact with them.
Now, I understand why dogs are trained as puppies, but can an older dog be trained to serve?
Was that question for me?
Either one of you.
Well, we'll find many of our organizations do acquire their dogs at an older age. Some of our programs acquire their dogs from shelters, and so the dogs may be a little older, closer to a year. So the age, a dog can be trained easily based on any age that the dog may come into the program. Usually, though, we like to have the dog placed by the time it is approximately 2 years old, so it has the longest possible in companionship and working life with their individual.
How can someone get a dog of their own?
As far as through one of our member organizations?
Yes.
We do have a website that is a member search website where individuals can look on the website with the location that they are, where they reside, and then look for an organization that trains the specific type of dog that they're looking for, and then contacting those organizations to learn of their application process and their services.
Mm. Now, Hallie, are the service dogs, are they allowed to retire?
Yes, absolutely. Service dogs are allowed to retire when they tell their partner that they're done working. There might be different signs from each dog. Some dogs slow down their pace. Some dogs, might develop some health issues that cause them to be uncomfortable in public, but still comfortable at home. We also really focus on the partnership that is working for the person and the dogs together as a team. So I've seen some dogs retire as early as 3 or 4. I've also seen some dogs retire when they're 12 and they still have a hard time not working and they still want to continue working.
I'm curious about how that process works. A dog retires, do they stay with their partner? I'm sure the partner would probably have to get a new dog to fill in the former position, right?
That's a conversation that our field representatives actually have with their partner, with the teams that they're in contact with. As the dog starts to age or as they start showing us with their behavior that they might be looking forward to a retirement, we have the conversation of where that dog might live during their retirement. Mm. One really cool option is the puppy or the dog going back to their puppy raiser. So the first people that raised them and had them in their home. Another option is the dog staying with their partner and becoming a pet. They can also find a home within their own network of family and friends. And we just really try to focus on what's best for the dog and what's best for that team.
Okay. So whatever happens is a happy ending for everyone.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to thank my guests, Chris Diefenthaler with Assistance Dogs International and Hallie Wells with Dogs, Inc. Really, thanks to you both. Really appreciate you being here with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll talk with service dog handlers and trainers to learn more about the programs they offer and to dogs and their owners. We'll be right back. This is Nashville.
Was nice, the party was pumping. Hey, yeah. And everybody having a ball. Ha, ha. Until the fellas start the name calling.
I'm Khalil Colonna, and this is Nashville. We are talking about service dogs and how they help humans take on everyday life. Now, before the break, we learned about what a service dog is and how our government regulations, or lack thereof, impacts what people can do with their service dog. Now let's learn more about the training of service dogs. What does it take to train the dog and the human properly? We'll also discuss some of the programs available for future service dog owners. For that, I'd like to introduce Claire Schultz. She is a service dog handler and owner of Cosmic Service Dogs. She's here with her service dog, Pluto. And joining her is Austin Marshall. He's a guide dog recipient from Southeastern's Guide Dogs, Claire and Austin and Pluto. Thank you all so much for being with us today. Welcome to This is Nashville.
Thank you for having us. I'm very excited.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's great. Okay, so Claire, what drew you to work in the training of service dogs?
So I actually have a background in training horses, and that was a huge passion of mine for so long. And then I became much more disabled, and it seemed like dogs were a little bit easier for me to handle. So my passion just kind of shifted from horses to dogs, and training service dogs is just so rewarding because you get to actually see how they can help people in their day-to-day life.
Now tell me, describe this relationship that you and Pluto have. He's a beautiful, beautiful black lab. What's the bond like between you two?
I don't know if I even have words to accurately describe it. I feel tears coming into my eyes right now. He is truly my best friend. He has given me my life back. I don't know what I would ever do if I didn't have him. There's just been such a quality of life change that even like distant family members of mine, they are able to see and note and just recognize how much he has helped me.
How'd you pick Pluto?
So I did what is called a Volhard temperament test. It's a common temperament test in the dog training world that people use to kind of predict what puppies' temperaments will be like as they're older. And it's essentially a scoring system. You introduce them to various situations and stimuli and rate how they react to these situations. And most service dog trainers try to go for puppies that will score like 3 or 4s on the test. And Pluto scored mostly 3s and 4s. So I chose him.
Okay. Now, when you're training a new dog or a puppy, what's the first thing you want to establish with the animal?
Honestly, I really just like giving them the space to explore the world around them. I want to encourage a healthy relationship with the environment. I want them to see that there's nothing in this world that is so scary that they can't handle right now. And if there is something that's scary, I have your back.
They have yours as well.
Exactly.
Now, I've heard the term program dog. So what are they and how are they different than others from other service dogs?
So when you hear the term program dog, you're typically talking about some sort of organization that has puppy raisers and professional trainers on staff. Puppy raisers are volunteers. They're not on staff. And they take the dogs and they are not the ones who the dog will end up with. They are raising and training the dog for someone else. And eventually the dog gets placed with a disabled handler. And then you also have what we call owner trained dogs, which are dogs that the disabled person who will keep the service dog, they are the ones to get the dog and raise the dog and train the dog themselves.
Okay. Now, Austin, I understand that you have a situation going on we were talking about with dogs retiring. For a long time, you had a guide dog named Bentley, but now you have a new dog because Bentley is retired. Is that right?
Yes, sir. So we retired Bentley. He was one of those that wasn't quite ready to quit, as a lot of them do. So he will actually be 12 in August. And we semi-retired him, started phasing him out around his 11th birthday. And then when I got the call to return to class for his successor, we pretty much retired him the week before I entered class. So we're going through that transition at the moment.
How long had you two been together?
So it will be 10 years on the 13th. The 13th of May was our gotcha day. So we were together about 9.5 years before we retired.
That's a long time. Now, tell me, what's the name of your new dog?
So the new dog's name is Bruxy, which is a bit different. They're sponsored by donors, so they get the chance of naming a dog. And she was actually named by a dentist. So Bruxy comes from Bruxation, which is a little different, but it's also a cute name and it's unique. So it's nice that, to having a unique name as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you planning to maintain ownership of Bentley as Bruxy takes over his work?
Yes. So he's actually somewhere behind me. They're total opposites, but two peas in a pod. So they're probably cuddling on the couch or something like that somewhere.
Gotcha.
But I did keep him. Like I said, I did have the option to, either have his puppy raiser adopt him or go to a family member. But Bentley for me was special. They had told me going in that I would never get another dog like him, just because of how special he was, and that there's never a dog like your first one. So I couldn't live with the fact that I wouldn't be able to keep them at all. And that's a common misconception that you do have to give them up after retirement, but a lot of dogs, a lot of handlers do keep their dogs after they retire.
I can hear how special Bentley is to you. How did that relationship begin?
So it started actually a couple of years before I got him. I was actually on the subway in Atlanta and saw this little blob of fur sitting under subway seat. And I couldn't figure out what it was. Obviously, being legally blind, my vision's not great. And my sister was like, that's a guide dog. That man's blind. And from that point on, it kind of stuck. And we went through the application process. And then I was actually still in college at the time. So I had, you know, I took a half victory lap. So I had one more semester remaining the year that I got him. So I decided to come early and get him and use that last semester kind of as a transition year. So I got the call probably April of 2014, right before I was actually about to enter into finals. And they called me in a class. So class is about 20. Back then it was, I think it was like 27 days. Now it's condensed to 22. So I got the call to come into May. You come in, you do like an orientation type day where you kind of meet everybody in your class and meet the trainers and everything. And then you're matched on the next day. So that match process actually took about 6 months for us. And I don't necessarily know what the stats on their matches are now, but it, you know, it stuck from the beginning. And we've been a team ever since. And you know, we haven't looked back.
What was your life like before Bentley came into it?
It was actually much like it is now. I was always kind of a busybody, I guess I could say. My parents always, you know, they didn't tell me no growing up. They only told me no to two things, and that's football and driving. And thankfully they were correct on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But when Bentley came in, you know, I'd gotten around in life as a pretty independent person, and I wasn't even sure that I could get a guide dog when I applied for him. I was like, I had not really come into my own as a disabled person and had not really known what kind of services that a guide dog would offer or what kind of, you know, benefits that a guide dog would offer. And it was something for me that took a transition period just of like having to trust the dog. I've been trusting my own eyes for, you know, 22 years at that point, and I'd figured out a lot of things, but a lot of things I had figured out incorrectly or wrong. And it was definitely a transition year, but, you know, pre-Bentley was more of, I struggle with a lot of like self-confidence issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you walk around with a, you know, vision loss, you're looking at the ground, you're looking at certain cues that are going to help you out. And you know, it clicked with me probably about the third day that I got Bentley out. We were on the nature walk on campus, and I was having a little bit of issue kind of trusting him. I was, they call it overwalking. So I basically was kind of pushing him in the harness. And my trainer, Jen, from Dogs Inc., was actually like, hey, look up, look around you. And I did. I tried it the next time, and I look, and I'm able to have a face-to-face conversation with her walking down the sidewalk. And I'm still, you know, we as handlers still have to give the dogs directions, but it was nice to know that that's coming up, or to be able to look at her, you know, and have a face-to-face conversation. And that's really when it clicked for me, and it kind of grew from there. So we were pretty tight from the beginning once I realized that. And it just kind of grew from there.
What was that like? I mean, you're explaining that for 22 years, you're fairly independent, taking care of things on your own as best you can. Then Bentley comes into your life and you have to kind of be vulnerable and trust Bentley, who's new to your life, to help you get around. Talk to me a little bit about emotionally how you felt as you came to that moment.
Yeah, you do. And trust is a big key. You know, I live just off of Charlotte Avenue. As you know, being local to Nashville, it's crazy around here with drivers and everything. But, you know, people see Bruxy and I, or Bentley and I, kind of walking around and being independent, and they don't see that first like 2 or 3 months that we were together. So it took a lot of trust, and I guess humbling myself in that whole situation to know that, like, okay, there are certain things that I'm going to have to let go of. And I don't think let go is the proper word. I think I would more or less say that there were things that I needed to learn to trust him to do as opposed to doing it on my own.
Okay. So
you know, I have no vision in my, yeah, go ahead.
On that note, I do want to ask you, how important is it to properly educate people with and without disabilities on what service dogs can offer and do for us?
I think it's very important. I think most of the situations that I've actually found myself in with, you know, I guess the biggie would be access issues. It just comes down to a lack of education. It comes down to, you know, people not understanding the rules or maybe interpreting them incorrectly. You know, obviously ride shares have been a big topic of debate for the last few years. And what I've come down to is just, it's mostly just educating people and say, hey, this is what the ADA says. This is what is offered to a service dog handler. You know, let's try to figure out something that works for both of us. And there are situations where, you know, they could turn down the dog and, you know, it would be appropriate, you know, but when it comes to like ride share or public access, a lot of times it's just, they've never come across that situation before. I know being originally from Mississippi, it was something that happened a lot when I first got him. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it came down to letting them know, like, this is the law, this is what it says. And, you know, here's how we can work together as a handler and a patron of the restaurant that I would frequent. You know, here's how we work together to kind of get through that.
Any other things you want to spell out to people who may not be aware of what service dogs can do?
I think the biggest thing is just, you know, if you see a handler on the street, you know, feel free to ask them about the dog. It's been an icebreaker for me for the most part. And, you know, we as handlers all get the same default questions, but you know, those are conversations that, you know, give you the opportunity to educate people, and give you the opportunity to, you know, find out. And I think like as frustrating as it gets sometimes to be asked so many questions a lot when I'm out and about, because there are things that I have to do and everything, it does give me a chance to not only advocate for myself, but advocate for other handlers and, you know, show them what these dogs are capable of.
That is Austin Marshall, who joined us with his dogs, Bentley and Bruxy, whom he got from Southeastern Guide Dogs. Austin, thanks to you and the dogs for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Claire Schultz is going to stick with us through the break. When we come back, we'll get a little deeper into the world of service dog ownership and training to learn how to properly handle and train your four-legged companion. You can join the conversation by tweeting us at This Is Nashville. We'll be right back. I'm Khalil A. Colonna, and this is Nashville. Guide dogs and service dogs are humans' best friends. We've been hearing about how these dutiful animals can help alleviate or even ameliorate a disability, which makes me selfishly question if cats can do the same. But I fear mine are too far gone in the world of being spoiled to offer anything more than a nice cuddle and purr. All right, nonetheless, dogs are ready for the task of being helpful companions for people living with a disability, but only if they're trained correctly. So let's learn what it takes to train and handle a service dog. Service dogs are trained well, but sometimes they make mistakes. Let's listen to one such moment. Here's a clip from The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon.
When you fall, you're gonna fall super dramatically, okay, so that she thinks that you're injured. I'm going to move her over there, okay, so that she's like ready and set to go.
Okay.
And when you fall to the ground, just tell her push.
She's not gonna attack me or anything, right?
No. She super loves everybody.
All right. So dramatic fall, lay down and say push.
Push.
Okay. Gotcha.
Say let's go.
And do I give the ham to the dog? No.
Just hold it in your hand. Sit. Oh. Sadie, push!
Sadie, push.
Push.
Oh, Sadie, push.
Sadie.
Sadie, good job.
Sadie.
Thank you.
Sadie, push. Sadie.
Sadie, give me mouth to mouth. Sadie, give me mouth to mouth.
Sadie, push.
Push.
Push. Push. Sadie, push. Sadie.
Come on, baby. What's going on?
That's something, Sadie, getting a little fresh on late night TV, but hey, that's how it goes sometimes. Now, joining us is right now is this episode's producer, Elizabeth Burton, who's the owner of probably one of the most adorable service dogs in the world, Cal. Elizabeth, it's good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you, and welcome back, Khalil.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's so fun to be back. Now, I want to hear a little bit about you. How did you first learn about service dogs?
Oh, boy. So, American Girl of the Year 2007, Nikki Fleming, she was a puppy raiser with a service dog organization, and I read that book and was like, oh, I have to do this. But I had two little sisters, one of whom was 1 year old, so my parents were certainly not on board with adding a puppy to the household. So I kind of held on to that dream until I was an adult because it was shut down.
It was shut down.
Shut down.
But, okay, so you held on to that dream. As an adult here in Nashville, you get started. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I found a local training organization here, and it was a great opportunity to learn more about what service dogs can do because, you know, just as like a member of the general public, I guess, I just was like, oh, they help people who use wheelchairs and they help people who maybe they can do something with diabetes. I didn't really know any of the details. So it was definitely a good crash course in learning all about what they can do for people, psychiatric service dogs, diabetic alert service dogs, and all of that.
What did you learn about yourself in that process?
So I had a really interesting experience with when I worked with some of the older dogs at this organization that had already been matched, specifically psychiatric service dogs and seizure alert service dogs. And at that time, I had been in and out of therapy for a while, so I knew I had like anxiety and things like that. And at that point, I had never considered getting a service dog for myself, but working with these dogs that were older and really close to graduation, I found that it was really helping just my ability to be out and about in public, be calmer, be able to do things. Kind of like Claire was saying earlier, I was like having friends and family comment like, oh my God, like you've gone to this thing, you've gone to this thing. You just seem like you're in such a better mood and a better place. And so I started thinking like, oh, maybe this is something that could help me. Then I started learning more about migraine alert dogs and all this kind of stuff. And I had a dog who beat the doctor on the non-epileptic seizure diagnosis. And hey, was like, oh, so maybe this is a need more than just like something that might be cool.
And hence you get Cal into your life.
Yes, I got Cal about a year ago. He's a trip. You've met him.
Yes, yes.
He's a funny little guy.
Yes, he is. Absolutely. Dare I say he's debonair even.
He really is. Yeah.
He truly is. Now, Claire Schultz from Cosmic Dog Services is still with us. Claire, you and Elizabeth know each other from the service dog community, right?
I'm sorry. Yes. Who are you?
I've never met you before in my life.
We need to stop because we'll do a bit for like the next 10 minutes. Okay. And then that'll be the
whole
episode.
I got 9 left.
Yeah. No. So actually, Cal is one of my clients. He is very, very fun. I love this dog so much. And we met when right before Elizabeth got Cal. She reached out to me and was like, hey, we should meet up sometime. I'm getting a puppy. And I was like, absolutely. I love to meet more people in the local service dog community. And since then, we just do bits constantly, all the time.
Now, is her story common? Like someone who's volunteered only to realize that they could benefit from having a service dog?
Yeah, I would say that quite a few people who volunteer as puppy raisers eventually realize how much these dogs actually benefit them and then go on to get a dog of their own.
We've discussed the proper temperament of the dogs. What about the humans? Like, what does it take to be a service dog trainer?
It takes really thick skin, I have to say. When you have someone who's looking to be a service dog handler, I often offer my service dog for them to kind of demo. We can go out to a store, like a bookstore or a grocery store, and they can just handle Pluto, just so they can kind of see what it's like. Because when you go out with a service dog, everyone's looking at you. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, there's a dog here. What are they doing? Like, you will constantly get questions. And it's one of the things where I've been a handler for over 4 years now. I'm so used to it. It doesn't bother me anymore. But for some people who are looking for psychiatric service dogs, it could be very triggering for them, mm-hmm. especially if they have any sort of like paranoia or PTSD, stuff like that. Being the center of attention can be very triggering for them and sometimes more hurtful than helpful. Mm. But also on the other hand of that, I've also heard that people who have these kind of like paranoid thoughts, having a service dog with them is helpful because it can reassure them that people are looking at the dog and not them.
Ah. That was my experience. Yeah. That was definitely my experience.
It depends on the kind of person you are. And if you are looking into getting a service dog and have the opportunity to handle someone's service dog, I highly suggest going for it because it's really a one of a kind of experience.
Tell me about the program that you offer at Cosmic Service Dogs.
So right now I only offer assistance with owner training. So I don't offer any started dogs or program dogs. I am specifically geared towards helping people who already have their dog or are looking to get a dog and want to train on their own and offering extra support that way.
Okay. Now, Elizabeth, what was it like for you getting adjusted? Did you feel overwhelmed at any point?
With Cal?
Yeah.
Claire, you want to take this one?
I think the main reason Elizabeth reached out to me to work with me was because she was feeling overwhelmed with Cal.
Yeah.
We specifically started with a board and train with Cal just so she could have a little break from him for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I love him dearly. I love that dog so much, but he's a doodle. They don't really come with an off switch. You have to teach them how to even begin to think about maybe potentially calming down a little bit.
Okay.
And the first couple of months that I had him, it was really just like me and him. And there was no relief in sight. It was just sometimes really exhausting. And when he hit that like teenage, just, I don't care what you have to say. There's probably certain words that he was thinking that I can't say on air. At that point, I was like, okay, I need help. I just need a break. I need him to go somewhere. And I cried like every night. I was like, I miss Cal.
And I think that's something that like we honestly need to talk about more when it comes to owner training mm-hmm. service dogs is...
it's exhausting.
At the end of the day, the people who are owner training service dogs, they're still disabled. Mm. And now they have this toddler essentially that needs all of their time and care and energy. And it's really, really hard. In some ways, it's more accessible financially for people. In some ways, it's less accessible because you have to put all of your time and energy into this dog. And that can be time and energy that disabled people just don't have.
So what type of community is out there to help them and support them?
There's really not a lot. There can be like online communities where people can offer like encouraging words. But unless you're able to like hire a trainer, there really is not a lot of extra support.
Now, you work a lot with dogs from all over Middle Tennessee.
Yes.
What's the difference in training from a dog that lives, you know, urban area like mm-hmm. Nashville and one who lives pretty far out?
So I would say in a temporarily sound service dog, there isn't a huge difference. For example, I live in a very rural area. The most I do with Pluto in my day to day is like go to our local coffee shop and just sit down and hang out. But he can also navigate urban environments very, very well. It's more so knowing that your dog has been exposed carefully and properly as a puppy. And knowing that they can handle pretty much anything you throw at them.
All right. So question for both of you. Got about just under a minute left. What about if I see a service dog in public? I've seen them and they look calm and peaceful. If I ran up on Pluto or ran up on Cal, I'm like, these are beautiful, awesome dogs. I would like to say hi. But I've heard sometimes that's foul and you really shouldn't go and pet a service dog. Is that true? And what rules should I and others be aware of when we're in public?
I think the biggest thing is consent. Did the handler consent to you saying hi to their dog? I am fine with people coming up and saying, oh my goodness, your dog is beautiful. I love your dog. Can I say hi to him? Most of the time, if he's not actively working, I'll say yes. But if you're rude and pushy about it, if you come up and pet without even asking me, without even acknowledging me, at the end of the day, we are people too who have a dog. We are not the dog. Mm-hmm. So just acknowledging that we're humans too and we're here.
Elizabeth?
I would say, you know, avoid stories about your dead dog, or avoid strange questions such as, what's wrong with you? What are you doing here? Also avoid barking at people. And I'm not saying these things is hypothetical. These are all things that have actually happened to me.
Me but as like, well. So yeah, it's very
like,
common.
Yeah. Like Claire said, just be respectful. Ask if it's okay. And if the person says no, then, you know, move on about your day, because I'm sure you're going to see another dog soon that you can pet.
Mm-hmm. When I was an intern in D.C. way back in 1994, one of the attorneys had a guide dog,
yes,
Smokey. Smokey bit people a couple times, though. He had to retire pretty quick.
Oh, no.
Yes. I want to thank my guests, Claire Schultz, the owner of Cosmic Service Dogs. She joined us with her service dog, Pluto. Thanks to you both for being here. And thanks to a producer, Elizabeth Burton, for sharing her experience as a dog owner and trainer with us, and happy first birthday, Cal.
Thank you.
Yes, and thanks to you for tuning in this hour. This is Nashville, is a production of Nashville Public Radio. Today's episode was produced by Elizabeth Burton, directed by Tasha A.F. Limley. Our technical director is Liv Lombardi. Thanks to all the hosts who filled in while I was gone. You know the deal. You can listen back at our podcast at thisisnashville.org or wherever you get good ones. This is Khalil A. Colonna. So good to be back. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.